honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by the U.S. Army. Find your place on the Army team at goarmy.com/warriors.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our chance to visit with a spirited 98-year-old who celebrates birthday number 99 on August 14th. For four straight Augusts during World War II, Walter Glenn marked birthdays in uniform, serving with the 32nd Infantry Division in the Pacific. He was a machine gunner and later a driver on muddy jungle roads in the Philippines. He had to deal with grenades, mortars, bombs, machine gun, and sniper fire. But it wasn't any of those things that landed him in the hospital. So why don't you tell us about that one thing out of more than 500 days of combat that did land you in the hospital? What was it?
I think it is that foxhole. You put the dirt around, especially through New Guinea, later at Leyte in the Philippines. After about 8 hours, it rains almost all the time because there's so much shooting going on. I've been up, so the most time the daggone foxhole get full of water. Think of this. I got some kind of daggone fever. I lined up and they start put food in the plate. I just felt sick. Man, I felt I had a lot of fever. When that sergeant met sergeant, he said, Glenn, you on kitchen duty this weekend. I said, Sergeant, I'm sick. You got your men hospital? I said, I don't have to be. I'm sick. I'm going back to the tent. I come back, told Sergeant Brooke, and I said, boy, I'm going to the egg station. Sergeant come down there, that's where Glenn at. Said, he said, they was sick. He'd been to the doctor. He said, if Glenn is sick, he is sick. So I went up that tent. I go on that up. Said, you woke up here? Yeah, I got that. You feel all right? I feel hot. Just we got 103 fever. You got this fever. You got that? It feels like I'd like to take my bones out and sound them down. Boy, that is but some stupid name of fever they have over there. Then at that time, the division then went over to another campaign. So I had to help finish tearing the tent down. Then that got my pack on. Just walk up in the combat. No more than I get up there with this shooting going on up. We got relieved of duty. I missed most of that campaign up. Thank you, Lord, for my birthday. Birthday 1944.
How long were you in the hospital?
I had about 2 weeks or so, I guess, sir. I don't know what kind of medication, but that boy, he finally gets where you can have a little appetite again and eat, but that time, onion teeth, they got some of the funny, peculiar name of fever that them boogers had over there, you know.
But you would have spent those 2 weeks in combat if you weren't in the hospital, right?
Yep, I did that. I missed that while I was in the hospital.
So maybe that fever saved your life.
At different times, I've always got shot with some of my own troop. We were just training them to shoot. I thought they shoot right by me. I said, you got no sense. And all that shoots the ground. You don't shoot where you can't see what's going on there. Felt like shooting. That boy, I chewed that booger out. I heard you come out here, have been training somebody. Boy, I told you, you don't shoot through the brush. People, you're out here taking your training in this jungle, boy. I'll be daggone. But I've seen so many planes has fallen hit in the daggone water and all them, and nobody get out of life and it burn them up, you know. And they'd seen the ship hit right in the side. Japanese fly right in the side of one of them with a missile. I don't know how many troops it would die in some of the troop ship out there, you know. And we'd let it hit the ground, that big missile, hit the boat, that might come right up on our boat, and it hit and go down in the water, jumped our boat. Some way it hit and flew that.
So a missile hit the water in front of your boat and hopped over your boat?
So they didn't get no ship with that one. They seen them coming up the stream. You squat down in that boat, it wouldn't do no good because it would shoot right through it. But if you could hide behind anything, it didn't hit you. That was something again. That a lot of what I think was close calls, as well as some of the time you're sleeping, never knowing about, you know. But I tell you, there's so many different places through that. You don't know how close it called on that where you drive the truck. Right, a landmine in the road, and different ones have to hit that. Sometimes it blow up that old wheel of tar, something off the truck. Sometimes it killed a whole bunch in the that old truck or something that hit that landmine in there. And out in the fields, when it put them out there, and booby traps, it wasn't as many booby traps and landmines through the auditor. That's because there's too much rain on it. But like Hussein, look how they put all that junk in that over there. I could think different things about it, about thanking the good Lord. How many different times and that body could have dipped down like somebody else, but this wasn't my time there. I don't know how many close calls, but there was a lot, there was plenty of them. I used to think, used to really hurt me, wake up thinking about it. Always tears come my eyes and up. Got finally, after so many years, 60, 70 years, 70-something years, then you just get rummed up. Kind of try to block out that part as much as you can. I just figured, so many friends you took your daggone training with and all that bugger that, and that's worse. You don't make it back. I just have to thank the good Lord for sparing me this all this extra time.
Earlier you were talking about an incident that you were going to be given a medal for, but the person who was going to put you in got killed.
I'm supposed to get a medal. I'm driving under that gun for him with him, that jeep, that mountain gun shooter. But Captain Watson's going to do that. And that was off that Middlebury Trail. Oh, that's probably back in about June 1945, I guess. But anyway, that mountain gun, if somebody got a hold of him and wounded that bugger that, in time to get that speed, he slowed down, go around the shoulder up, around the bomb hole, three or four up, finally get in, talk a little bit. As you come in the trees, it's a little old narrow spot. There's a bum laying in the road. You had to miss that. It might set it off. It was dead. You'd drive right by how fast you could, but get in behind the trees and then out to the medics. Yeah, that's something up, holding from my underpar or something, but I didn't get nothing for that. Then another place, we got off in no man's land. There was three or four of us, Leroy Hines, Burgess Kennedy, had them up, but we got the wrong road down no man's land. They're going to give us a president's citation for that. That's the same thing, that one the captain did. But some sergeant had gave us that little purple medal for that boat up. It was taken in the box out of stuff had there, but it wouldn't put on the books. I thought all that's no man's land until we took it back. We look it, had got that to the Japanese. Had scattered back. They tried to get back closer together, because then time they got scattered off there, but the patrol that hit, surrounded them over there, had killed that bunch over there, you know. After that, they bomb was dropped the second one there. They dropped them some radio stuff and down in there. Well, they started just coming out there. Oh, yes, carried that stack of the rifles up there. All that outfit, building daggone fence all around there. Place where they put tents and stuff, all that. Every corner, the place had a machine gun. The thing of this, they would introduce some new vehicles and stuff. We're going to have to go to Japan. We go over to the Sixth Army and land in the rice paddy. If they did what they did, then kicking up daisies, because you know you so long it's going to be it. You just think, when they were dug in from the Philippines, in the Jimmy, now, all these other islands, they seem they did like the Germans, all that solid rock out shooting that ocean. Well, it had bombs. I bet you we would have killed 7 or 8 million Japanese. We'd have lost another 600,000 men. Oh, my David, didn't you see them hate to drop that bomb? They didn't do nothing. Oh, that Drummond, what the truth did I do? Oh, he thought that was terrible, what it is. But the thing it is, that's the most. I'm glad it, but I'd been dead over there. We'd have killed a lot more millions. And that's war. There's nothing good about it. But anyway, I can thank the good Lord for keeping my pretty good health through the years. That one day where we had such a battle on that Billy Birdie Trail, that was a hard battle up. About 3.5 days, that Jap was trying to take that hill back. And we run real short on ammunition for the border trail and that Colonel Bourne. He came up there, at that time had me halt some ammunition. He goes up to the front line. He crawled out looking down there at these Japanese. He called back out where all these border shells shooting in there. Said, Jonesy, anyway, you slow that down a little. Can you slow it down about half as many? He said, "Nips don't have time to get up. I think we'll kill more." And sure enough, he did. Said, "Nips, slow it down." They get up to run, some of them filled, they got killed more. I went down to get another load of ammunition. Old Captain King there said, "You done shot your coat ammunition." When I get on call, I call the second lieutenant in charge up there. Well, when he's in charge, he's got much in the general seat. Anyway, I told him, "You might not shot our coat ammunition." He said, "Glenn, I need a lot of ammunition up. Let me talk to him." I had him that phone. Boy, you could, he looked me like he'd battered up. That boy, I said, "Load that left, haul that back up there." Then he wanted me to take a water treatment back down in like 500 gallons. I backed up to get that back. Couple of soldiers come to hook out on there. They can't move it in that mud. They hollered for some help. When a sniper come up here, shoot spread across, they grab that and drag down that mud, hook out on it. I took off around the bend. Time I got down the bend, had to stop there. I laughed hard, I couldn't drive. I pulled that, they dragged that trailer, that mud, they had to. Something doing this thing happened, that different thing in my life over through that, to live, tell about that one.
Tell me about the honor flight when you went with other veterans to Washington, D.C. What was that like for you?
It was awesome. I said, we went on that order plate. I looked at the unknown soldier. That get to you. But all that, it was awesome. That was some trip. I said, we came back over the mountain just before we get in the box. Had mail called. I didn't know my grandson, all that. Well, they had all that mail rigged up to give it to me. All these done had mail from all that. They get that mail, they had it all the time, give it up. All the school children. It was son in law's class. Little Leonard about all that. Thank me for my service. I'll be done. I got all that paper from them kids. And it's awesome. That was something again I love that.
When you were at the World War II Memorial and you see that wall of all the gold stars, over 406,000 Americans who died in World War II. What were you thinking about when you were at that spot?
You're just looking, and you think, that many families up there, it just hurts. It sure does. And you look at all the crosses, at the ones that's buried in that, other than cemeteries, all over, you can't beat that. It's just plain awesome how all that has kept them remembered, you know. Yeah, I got to meet so many nice, doggone people and other soldiers and their friends, mm-hmm. and threw that tour that back up. I still run on to them at the grocery store around here, but I haven't run into nobody from the 32nd Infantry Division. I don't know how long it's been since I've seen one of them.
This isn't an easy question, but I want to ask it because I think it's important because, you know, most of us didn't live through World War II. We really don't know what it was like to do what you did. And we didn't lose friends in the war the way you did. Are there some guys who you served with who didn't come home, who you think about from time to time? Are there names that you remember or faces?
I do. Every so I get to thinking and wonder, should it miss them? Never one about their families. Think about that. Some close friends, it just so, feels so bad that hurts. Especially when you work close together, they put their life on the line, you can sleep while they were watching over you. That makes it pretty close. That's what hurts.
What would you say you're most proud of?
I guess I'm most proud of winning the war and getting to come back. All the troops above that they left were just relieved. How happy, how the eyes brightened up when they seen the war's ended. All that light that lit up our boy. What a wonderful feeling. Having all that in the suburbs, as well as so many mothers and fathers, and lucky for some of the folks to come home, that's got to be about as good a feeling you ever find. It sure is.
Walter Glenn, 98 years old. Maybe you'll have a chance to wish him a happy 99th birthday on August 14th. One person who certainly will is his daughter, Linda James. And I thought you might enjoy hearing Linda's perspective before we wrap up today. When you were growing up, did you have any awareness of your dad's service in World War II?
No, not at all. That was not even talked about. So I don't even think I knew he was in the war, to be honest.
When was that first something you became aware of?
That's a loaded question because I was quite old because my dad never talked about it. Well, I knew he was in the service earlier than 10 years ago, but maybe 10 years ago it was pretty prominent that we talked about it. But only the last 4 years maybe that he really talks about it. Because before I would say something to him like, so I hear you're a war hero, and he would tear up and he'd say, I'm not the hero. But now he, as you interviewed him, you can tell that he can talk about it more now. There's some things that he gets emotional about at times, but for the most part, he can talk about it now. And so I've learned more about him in the last probably 2 or 3 years than I ever have as far as the war goes.
What do you think changed to make him open up about it more?
Just time and probably just talking to others. And maybe the biggest thing that changed it is when we went on the honor flight. I really think that did it because it was in 2015 that we went and he got to see the other veterans and conversing with them and they would all sit around and talk. And I think that really kind of like broke the ice, so to speak. I think that might have been it.
And that was a multi-generational family experience for you guys?
It was. My daughter, her husband, and my grandson from Colorado flew into Washington the same days that we were going to be there on the honor flight. I went as a guardian with my dad. They would walk to each destination we were going to and meet us there and walk around through it. It was fabulous. It made the trip even better because we shared it with the family.
Were you surprised at all by any of the things that happened on that trip or how your dad was treated on that trip?
I wasn't surprised because I knew veterans are just precious cargo, so to speak. And I wasn't surprised by any emotional things that went on. I was really waiting for the mail call to come because he completely did not know that. I mean, that was the big secret. So I knew all those letters that he was receiving from my brother-in-law's school kids and letters from all of us that we compiled. I knew that was coming, but of course none of the veterans did. And that was probably the neatest thing out of the entire trip is to watch that.
As you've learned more about his time in the military, the places he was, some of the things that happened, is there a story or two that really grabbed you or really got to you and thinking about being in his shoes in that situation?
When he talks about, because he was a gunner, he's shooting at people, right? But for him to be that and knowing that bullets are whizzing past his head, that's real scary. And he couldn't stop. He had to continue because that was his job. And that his integrity is that he does whatever he's supposed to do, you know, and without fault, he's going to go through it. And so knowing that he had to stand behind the machine gun and operate it with bullets coming his way as well. He couldn't duck and hide. So yeah, that's huge.
And there's a lot of people who wouldn't be here if one of those bullets got them.
Absolutely. Me, one of them.
I know that sounds cliche, but I think a lot of us go through our daily life not thinking about that.
Yeah.
How real of an awareness is that for you? Because it's not just you. You had a couple sisters and there's grandkids and great-grandkids and great-great-grandkids.
Yeah.
How real is that idea?
It's hard to wrap your head around that. It really is. I mean, it's real, but I don't know how to even say how real it is. I mean, it is a fact that many of us would not be here.
And he's just your typical 98-year-old, right?
Not even. Oh my gosh. This man is so active. It's unbelievable. He says that us girls take him places and keep him active. He stays active all on himself. He's going to be driving until he's 100 years old, which is next year. When he took his driver's license, he got 100% on it. Shocked us because we don't even do that. He's very active. He never meets a stranger. He loves everybody. He loves life. And he's always on the go. He's always up for anything. He's the best travel buddy you could ever want. So yeah, I keep him hopping, but he keeps himself hopping too.
Why do you think it's important that people your age, my age, younger than us, know what your dad and all those guys like him in World War II, a couple of your uncles also, they went through all those years ago?
Oh my God, it matters today because that's what we have today. We have our freedom because of that. That's it in a nutshell, bottom line. So they need to know that. And you know, a lot of the younger kids do realize that. It surprises me sometimes. Some of the younger kids, whenever my dad and I have gone on trips, they will come up and they will, if we're in restaurants, and they'll pay for his dinner, our dinner. We've had that happen numerous times. They will get ready to pay our ticket and they'll say, oh, it's already been taken care of, either by another veteran or by a young couple. And it's just astounding. So a lot of them do know.
Anything else you want to say about your dad?
Love him, love him, love him. Yeah. You're going to get me choked up here, Paul. Don't do this. I do. I love him to the moon and back. He's awesome.
There's a little more from Linda and, of course, her dad in the podcast version of this episode at hometownheroesradio.com. But here on the radio, we're out of time. So thanks so much for listening today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by the U.S. Army, building a new generation of leaders at goarmy.com/warriors.